Well, good evening and welcome to the John Whitmer Show, sponsored by Wink Hartman and the Hartman Group of Companies. Very happy to have you with us this evening on this, oh, so chilly. Hey, it's not triple digits, so that makes it chilly. Balmy July evening here at your local liberal resistance headquarters, where we proudly champion the core conservative principles of limited government, individual liberty, free enterprise, and traditional values. Thank you for joining us this evening. If you'd like to call in, our studio lines are open. You can call or text at, for some reason, I just haven't had enough coffee tonight. You can call or text the studio line 316. I've been filling in Kansas City, Phil, so I keep having the Kansas City studio line 316-869-1330 by email at john@knssradio.com. It's what happens when you fill in Kansas City. I had the KCMO number pop up into my head.
Well, I'm glad you didn't say it.
Yeah, well, I caught myself because that 913 number popped up in my head, and I'm like, 913, nope, wrong number. You can email me at john@knssradio.com, and you can find and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer. Reach out. We'd love to hear from you. Couple of items to remind you about. Sedgwick County Republican Party is having our evening with the Right Governors. It's a get-out-the-vote fundraiser coming up on August 9th. With former Governor Sam Brownback and former Governor Jeff Collier, who is the state director for the Trump campaign. It's a great event. You can get more information at the Sedgwick County Republican Party website and on the John Whitmer Show Facebook page. And we also have a major announcement. The show just landed a new sponsor, Eck Insurance. My buddy John Eck has just signed on as a new sponsor for the John Whitmer Show. It's a special sponsorship. We're going on the road. So one Sunday a month, starting in January, we will be broadcasting live from Topeka. We will be broadcasting one Sunday night a month. We will bring you live coverage from the legislature. We'll broadcast live from Topeka and bring you guests, live guests. I'll try and time it when there's important things, like, for example, when they begin their session, we'll be in Topeka. When they've got major votes, we'll be in Topeka. Right before the governor's State of the State address, we'll be in Topeka. All sponsored by John Eck at Eck Insurance. Thank you to my good friend John Eck. He just signed with us, so we've got a new sponsor. We'll take the John Whitmer Show on the road to Topeka starting at the first of the year. So look forward to that. In the meantime, we've got a great show planned for you tonight. Former assistant to President Trump, Peter Navarro, will be with us, fresh from his, from his exit from prison for failing to comply with the bogus January 6th committee and his appearance at the Republican National Convention. We'll talk with Derek Schmidt, who is joining us to talk about his campaign for Congress in the 2nd District. Daniel Greenfield will be with us to explore America's two-tier justice system, where two soldiers were recently arrested on charges of stealing pride flags, but Hamas protesters were not arrested after defacing national monuments last week. We'll continue our candidate profiles with conversations with Debbie Potter, who's a candidate for State Board of Education, and Steve Hubert, Republican candidate for House District 90. And, of course, we'll be taking your calls at 316-869-1330. So for the last couple of weeks, I've kept my powder dry. And frankly, I've kept it dry long enough. We've had other things to talk about during our first segment, and I'm tired of holding back. So let's talk taxes. After months of committees and taxpayer-funded consultants, some of our local elected officials have finally come up with a bait-and-switch plan to lower property taxes, which means raise sales taxes. That's their plan. They want to lower property taxes, quote-unquote, by raising sales taxes. Also, they can spend more money. And the claim is that they will lower property taxes, raise the sales tax to lower property taxes. But we've seen this sales pitch before. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. The core here is, do you trust the people who are putting this forward and the rest of their colleagues? And that's the key. in order to actually deliver on the cuts. And although we can trust commissioners like Ryan Beatty and Jim Howell, and at the city council where they're trying this same flim-flam, we could trust council member Dalton Glasscock, and we could trust Mayor Lily Wu. But does anyone trust that tax and spend David Dennis will actually keep his word? Does anyone trust that Brandon Johnson or some of the other Democrats on the city council will keep their word and lower property taxes once they've collected all those new sales taxes? At the city council, Brandon Johnson's already advocating to raise the mill levy. Ballard and Hoheisel will no doubt go right along with him, in which case all it would take would be one squishy Republican to, well, hey, look at that. We got new money. Maybe we should spend it. And down the street, the county commissioners are fiddling away around the fringes while the county's budget burns. And other than Howell, Beatty, Glasscock, and Wu, I've not heard sincere discussions from too many others about the real solution, which is cutting spending. That's what has to happen. Make no mistake, this is more than just a nuisance. These proposals are an all-out assault on the wallets of hardworking citizens, especially those already struggling to make ends meet. My wife and I were out door knocking again this week and talked to yet another retired Wichita homeowner who is terrified of losing their home after reading in the Wichita Eagle that the city and county are once again considering capturing all of the excess revenue and not maintaining the revenue neutral rate. It's important to recognize that these taxes aren't just an abstract number. They impact real people. And I'm talking about the poor and those on fixed incomes. And some people will say, well, it doesn't affect the poor because they don't own homes. No, but they pay rent. And the landlords will raise their rent. As Ronald Reagan said, the problem is not that the people are taxed too little. The problem is that government spends too much. This quote should be plastered on the walls of every city and county government office because these tax increases are a blatant signal that our elected officials have failed to control their spending and have instead chosen to reach deeper into our pockets. And even if they pass this sales tax to lower property tax plan, can we trust some of them to actually do it? Some of these folks are the same ones who told us we only needed 3 weeks to flatten the curve before they closed our businesses and implemented a citywide snitch line and mask mandates. Do you trust them to actually lower your property taxes once the sales tax revenues start flowing in? Or will they all of a sudden find new and quote-unquote essential or urgent needs for that money? Will someone decide, hey, we need a railway to Texas? Or will somebody all of a sudden decide we have essential core funding that includes, more cultural arts funding? Will all of a sudden they find new essential ways to spend that money instead of lowering your property taxes? Let me be clear, I'm not talking about all our city and county leaders. But the truly fiscal conservative ones who I trust are sadly in the minority. Jim Howell, for example, has been fighting at fiscal windmills so long he's now officially on the windmill payroll as their full-time antagonist. But he's alone. Here's a stark truth. Our local governments are treating the tax base like an unlimited ATM. Instead of tightening their belts and making the hard choices required to live within their means, they're opting to squeeze more out of taxpayers. This is a direct failure in fiscal responsibility. Barry Goldwater said, a government that is big enough to give you everything you want is big enough to take everything you have. And isn't that exactly what's happening here? These elected officials should be focusing on cutting spending, not finding new ways to take our hard-earned money. We need fiscal discipline, not fiscal abuse. There are numerous ways to streamline government operations, eliminate waste, and improve efficiency without resorting to higher taxes. It's high time we seriously audit government programs and get rid of those that aren't underperforming or redundant. Let's prioritize essential services and cut the fat. Perhaps it's time we prioritize courier services and let arts and culture events and venues fund themselves through grants, fundraisers, user fees, and endowments instead of through the property taxes of county retirees. And if our leaders are truly concerned about the impact on the community, they should be looking at how they can enhance service delivery through innovative means rather than defaulting to the tax and spend approach. Fiscal responsibility isn't about making life more difficult for the average citizen. It's about managing the public purse in a way that respects the financial limits of its contributors. So let's make our voices heard. We need leaders who are committed to finding real solutions, not those who think the answer to budget shortfalls is to squeeze more from taxpayers. Reach out to your local representatives. Let them know that enough is enough. Demand fiscal discipline, efficiency, and a genuine commitment to managing public resources without putting additional burdens on the very people who make the community thrive. It's not just about standing up for ourselves. It's about for standing up for those who cannot. It's about ensuring that our government is working for us, not against us. So stay vigilant, stay informed, and keep fighting for your right to keep more of what you earn. We'll take a quick break, and then Steve Hubert, Republican candidate for House District 90, will be with us. You're listening to The John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to The John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk, sponsored by Americans for Prosperity Kansas. Every Thursday, Americans for Prosperity Action activates the largest grassroots community operation in the country to join together and phone into key federal races across the U.S. Each week presents a new opportunity to join thousands of dedicated citizens committed to being the most impactful grassroots army in America. You can join AFP every Thursday from 3 to 7 p.m. Central Time to phone for freedom. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org and sign up today. And while you're online, don't forget to follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook and Truth Social pages, and follow us on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Well, as you know, every election cycle, we try to bring you as many candidates running for office as we can. We've only got a couple shows left tonight and next week before the primary. We're going to bring you as many candidates as we can. That being said, joining us now is Steve Hubert. Steve served in the House for 22 years, has stepped into a race now that incumbent Representative Carl Mann has chosen not to run for reelection. He once chaired the House Education Committee, which basically means he's got, you know, Teflon skin and wore body armor to hearings. He's running again for the seat he held from 2001 to 2023. Steve, thank you for joining us this evening. Pleasure to have you on the show, my friend.
Thank you, John.
Yeah, you took some slings and arrows. I forgot that you held that you chaired education. That KNEA must love you.
Well, we disagree about a few things.
Yeah, I'll bet you did. So, okay, you got out, you escaped. You're like the Godfather, dude. You're like Michael Corleone. I got out, and then they pulled me back in. So why? Why would you? Trust me, I know what it's like. I keep, like, toying with it and then, you know, getting in. Why would you even want to go back up there?
Well, I was enjoying retirement.
I'll bet.
You know, and when I was first asked, I initially said no. But then I said, I can relate. I would pray about it. And again, Carl's my friend. And I just told him I wouldn't run unless he asked me to. He finally, before the filing deadline, asked me to. And so I went up to Topeka and filed. And, you know, I'm ready to go back, a couple years sabbatical. You know, my slogan is now, refire, not retire. And I'm working hard to go back. And again, property taxes, you mentioned that.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the biggest issue we hear at the doors.
Yeah. And that's going to be job number one. I've spoken with House leadership, and I've spoken to senators. There's going to be a bill to the governor, I think, within 3 weeks. The question is, what's it going to look like? And that's going to be determined by what happens in these primaries and what happens in November. If we don't elect supermajorities in both chambers, the governor is going to be able to control what happens.
Oh, yes, because
we won't
right.
be able to write her veto.
Yeah, because she's going to veto it. She's already proven she doesn't care for real tax reform of any kind.
Yeah, that's why this election is so important. There's not a lot of primaries. I have one. And but the, you know, in November, we have to really get the message out that supermajorities are a must, and that's going to be challenging. This election cycle is going to be very challenging, and we need to increase voter turnout. I believe Trump on the top of the ballot is going to make turnout go way up.
That'll help for sure. You mentioned you've got a primary. Some of your voters may be a little confused when they go to vote, when they go to the ballot box, because, you know, Carl, for example, has dropped out, but he didn't drop out in time to have his name removed from the ballot. From what I understand from some of the folks that I've talked to, you know, my daughter and her family live in your district. There are some of the candidates that have, that may still also be on the ballot, but are supporting you. You have one true primary opponent who's actually running. So how many are on the ballot? How many are supporting you? I mean, it's kind of confusing.
There is four on the ballot, but, Durham Pugh, he and I discussed a lot of issues. We recognized we're on the same page, and he decided that he did not want to
split. So Darren Pugh is basically on the ballot but not running, supporting you.
He is.
And Carl Maughan, also on the ballot, not running, supporting you.
He, you know, I just saw him at the meeting with Roger Marshall.
Yeah, I saw him there too.
And, you know, he's a good guy, and, you know, he is doing the things he needs to do to get his life back.
Yeah, and I, and Carl, you know, it's unfortunate what the personal situations that he went through, and I'm glad to see him stepping back to deal with the personal stuff. And I'm glad that, that we have an opportunity to let the voters know that at least there's really only two people in the race, so that they're at least not confused. Let me ask you about some of the things that came up this last session. The legislature recently ended the special session passing tax reform. There were only two members of the House that actually voted against the tax bill. Sadly, one of them was mine. What was your take on the tax bill? Would you have voted yes for that tax bill?
Well, of course I would have. The thing that got the short end of the stick was property taxes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it could have been better income tax relief, too. Again, if it wasn't for Laura Kelly, but yeah.
Yeah, and I would have. And again, there was a lot of good bills that got sent to the governor and vetoed.
Right, yeah.
And she forced the special session, I believe, for political reasons.
Yep.
And, you know, that's unfortunate. You know, the bill that was passed, you know, provided good tax relief in a lot of different areas. But again, the one area that I think everybody knows going back for the 2025 session is property taxes need to be addressed. There's money available to make significant property tax relief available to our constituents.
We're talking with Steve Hubert, Republican candidate for House District 90. The other bill that they really pushed in the special session was the Star Bond bill. What are your thoughts on that and other incentive programs like the Panasonic, you know, the Apex bill?
Well, the Panasonic bill, I think, is not going to deliver the economic development that was promised. You know, I think we already see that the future for those batteries is not going to have the long-term future that a lot of people rejected even when we were talking about that bill. But that being said, you know, there will be, I think I've heard, that up to 3,000 to 4,000 jobs created. The amount of money that was
hopefully
the amount of money that was spent to get that plant in Kansas could have been spent in a lot of better ways to develop real economic growth and jobs in Kansas across the state.
Social issues have always been an issue. I know I don't have to ask you about pro-life, pro-Second Amendment. You're solid on those. I don't even need your opinions because I can testify to those because you and I served together.
Well, and I am endorsed by those organizations because I have a track record.
Yep, you're endorsed by KFL. You're endorsed by the KSRA. And I think you're also solid on issues like protection from women's and girls' sports.
Yes.
I'm pretty solid. I know where you are on that. Medical marijuana is going to come up again. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I know that there's been compromises floated, and I always hear from my friends in the police services that just there's valid reasons to be very skeptical. And, you know, I just right now I'm not ready to support those. I believe that I will, you know, look at whatever comes up. But again, I don't think we end up with a real medical marijuana compromise that would deliver the results that some people say that would deliver, and it would just open the door for things getting worse in Kansas like it's happened in other states that do have more than just medical marijuana. They have, you know, legal marijuana in states surrounding us.
You and I both know that nothing ever dies in Topeka, it just sort of lingers around until somebody, you know, resuscitates it. One thing that Laura Kelly has been pushing for, well, now going on 7 years, is Medicaid expansion. I guarantee you it's going to come up again. She's going to, you know, keep, she, this is her big pet project she's been pushing and will continue to push. Your thoughts on Medicaid expansion?
You know, I have voted against that in the past. And the reality is, even without expanding, the amount of money that we're spending for Medicare expenditures goes up and up and up every year. So it's like we're expanding it every year. They want to expand it in ways where they say that it's going to bring in free money from D.C. And there's no such thing. You know, the budget that we have right now continues to grow in ways that we have to control our spending. And all that bill would do would increase spending at rates far greater than what they're already growing right now.
Control spending. Gee, where have I heard that
before?
It's a novel concept.
Well, it's a hard thing to do.
Yeah, it is.
And I'm a fiscal conservative, and my wife will tell you that's not just a campaign slogan.
No, I remember. Trust me, I know. Steve, if we're up on my bottom of the hour break, but if folks want more information, if they want to reach out to you to connect with you, get a yard sign, or more importantly, if they want to donate to the campaign and support you, what's the best way for them to reach out?
You know, you can call me, 253-6558.
Brave man.
I will answer your phone calls, and I'll talk to you. I enjoy talking with my constituents, and I've been out knocking on doors and meeting them. And, you know, I'll get you a yard sign, too, if you want it.
That there, folks, is a brave candidate. One more time, give them the number in case they didn't get it.
253-6558.
Steve, I appreciate you. Best of luck in the new reelection. The new reelect of the old campaign resuscitator. How was your phrase again?
Fire, not retire.
Refire, not retire. I wish you the best of luck, my friend. We'll take a quick break. When we return, we'll continue our candidate profiles with a conversation with Debbie Potter, Republican candidate for State Board of Education District 10. Our studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk, sponsored by Wink Hartman and the Hartman Group of Companies. Hopefully you already listened to KNSS on your way to work, but have you tried listening before you head out to work with the free Odyssey app? You can simply download Odyssey, that's A-U-D-A-C-Y, and search for KNSS. To get all your news, weather, and traffic updates, whether you need them, whenever you need them. And while you're at it, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook and True Social pages. And follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Joining us now is Debbie Potter. She's a Republican candidate for State Board of Education District 10. Debbie is a mother of 8, a grandmother of 19, and a career United States Air Force wife. When it came to the education of her children, Debbie was a hands-on mom. As the USAF moved her husband, she engaged in the local school systems in Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, and Ohio to provide stability during the frequent Air Force moves. She homeschooled her children. She developed her own curriculum and taught at all levels, elementary through senior high. Debbie, thank you for joining us this evening. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Hi, John. Hi, Phil. Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. And I'll ask you the same question I just asked Steve. It's typically my first question. It's always the easy one, which is why, with 19 grandkids, you obviously have plenty of grandkids to go spend time with. Why would you want to, especially a thankless job like Board of Education?
Well, we all want the schools to be a safe place for all our kids. And I've got, I'm trying to remember of my grandkids, I would say, just under half of them are in the public school, so or will probably be in the public school.
As are mine.
Yeah, and so we all care. We all care about the options parents have, that they have the support of their community, and that they have good options, that they have choices to make. And Michelle Dombrowski's been beating me over the head for about a year to convince me we do have school choice in Kansas, and that's an important thing. I actually have learned. I've been attending the meetings for about 3 years.
I wish we had true school choice in Kansas. We don't, but I mean, in other words, the money follows the kid. I wish we had
We don't have all those options in the public school. We need to grow it. We could, but we need a
different governor for that.
We need to fight for it.
I would imagine that your experience has given you a rather unique perspective regarding empowering parents and curriculum for that matter as well. I mean, you must have seen having kids and, you know, grandkids in both the public and then, you know, homeschooling and private schooling. It's got to give you a unique perspective on the contrasts between public schools and private and homeschools.
Well, and I've also substitute taught in the public school for 3 years.
Well, then you definitely know. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have had some conversations. I think the biggest part of, schooling children is picking the right curriculum and having choices for parents to have the curriculums they would prefer for their children. And that goes down the line of the school choices. If, you know, you can't have a different curriculum book in for every kid in every school, you know. So the more choices of schools you have, the more choices you have to choose curriculums that match what your family cares about.
The problem is the unions, both of them, the teachers union, and I mean, I don't call it, the Kansas Association of School Boards isn't a union, but it might as well be. Neither of them want that. They don't want that kind of choice for parents. They want it to be a cookie cutter system that they can control, because choice empowers parents, whereas a lack of choice empowers bureaucracy. And that's what they don't like. And let me ask you, and we're talking with Debbie Potter, Republican candidate for State Board of Education, District 10. Having served in the legislature, I've seen firsthand the way this system works. And I think it's only a matter of time before they sue the state for more taxpayer money. Do you think our public education system is adequately funded now? Do you think they need more money, or is it just a matter of how they're appropriating and funding their schools?
I tell you, what I learned is that Kansas runs a budget of about $25 billion, and the Kansas schools have $8 billion. So if the whole state of Kansas can run on $25 billion, surely the schools can run on $8
billion. Do you think, I mean, right now, it just seems to me like they're top-heavy, that the bureaucracy is getting is where the spending is, rather than getting into the teachers.
Absolutely. You got teachers. Teachers are having to buy kids, you know, supplies.
Back to school supplies, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
And the kids are, for a free public education, it's kind of expensive to publicly educate your children in Kansas. I was always, had to be right. Well, with as many kids as I had, you know, I got to count here. Four of my kids graduated from public school, and three of my kids graduated from homeschool. And then we lost our eighth and, child. And, so I was always shocked at how much it cost me to enroll my kids in public school. And I know that others have had that experience too.
Let me ask you a little bit about some of the directions that some of the public schools have gone with the non-education patterns. Things like, you know, protection for women's and girls' sports. I mean, the legislatures had to force these things because so many of the school districts wouldn't do it. I mean, it started with the bathroom issues. And there were districts, even Derby, for example, was allowing boys and girls bathrooms. So the legislature had to step in. Then there were districts that were allowing girls, you know, boys to play on girls sports. So the legislature had to step in. Now the issue has become districts that are allowing, the schools are literally saying that, you know, a child who wants to gender transition is allowed to do it, and the schools are not informing the parents. And the legislature tried to pass the law, the governor vetoed it, and they couldn't override the governor. So right now, schools are allowed to do this. Do you think schools should be allowed to do that?
Well, actually, I'd say we already have laws. It's against the law.
Well, theoretically, but right now, in Kansas.
I was talking to somebody earlier, and I had written it down earlier, 72-6315. You're not allowed to collect this kind of data on the children. This really, I don't understand the school's need to get in between children and their medical care and their parents. I just don't understand it. It's just, we don't even teach them to read properly. If the schools could do everything else like they should, educate the children, then maybe, and they were just so good at it, maybe then they would have a leg to stand on to say that they would just have something to tell the parents. But they really don't. They need to do the job they've got to do. Teach the kids to read. Teach the kids to do math. Teach the kids science and history, and leave their medical care to their parents. Again, if they can have choices of schools, maybe some parents want the schools to raise their children for them. You know, I wouldn't want to put my child in that school, but it all goes with the school choice.
I'm glad to hear you say the focus where it needs to be, because I cannot tell you how many times I've had Dave Traubert from the Kansas Policy Institute on discussing student achievements, and in particularly college and career readiness. Mm-hmm. And our performance statewide and especially certain districts in Kansas are abysmal. And when a lot of schools talk about graduation rates and they tout their graduation rates. It doesn't matter if you're graduating these kids if they're not college and career ready. If you're graduating a kid but they can't do basic math, they can't read at a college level, then they shouldn't be graduating them.
Amen. That's all I know to say to that. No, I know of two real estate rental people that had to teach the two high school graduates how to sign their name on a lease. How do we call that a high school graduate? So it cheapens it for the high school graduates who actually did the work.
So what can the Board of Education do to fix that? Is that a matter of raising the standards? Is that how they fix that? Or just holding schools to the standards that are in the place?
Well, I think if you just hold people to the standard, if you hold people to the laws that are already on the books, I mean, there's just so many, what ifs that way. But it goes a little deeper in my mind than that, because I do think that maybe we should explore some other ideas in education, that maybe some kids only really need and or want what used to be like a sixth, eighth grade education. They have no desire to be college preparatory. They're burned out. They don't want to. And they really pull down all the kids who are anxious to have a college preparatory education. But then at least they can attain something and own it. And it's real and they did it. And they're not, that's just a thought I'm formulating in my mind. It's not a stance. It's not anything I feel strongly about.
But you're right, then. You've got something there. I mean, I've always advocated for kids that want to get a high school diploma and then go on and get technical education or get, certified in HVAC or something. You can have a hell of a life and make a great career and make good money as an electrician, as an apprentice. I mean, you make really good money as a blue collar job. And I think so many people look down on blue collar. We need more blue collar workers. We need more HVAC electricians, and we need to stop. Look, if somebody isn't college able or interested, don't force it. Especially because nowadays the attitude is, well, put them to college and then we have to pay for their college. Well, maybe they don't want to go to college.
Well, and you set them up to fail
exactly.
Because they're not going to meet that goal. And then on the same hand, while you're setting them up to fail, you're taking away from the children any opportunity to actually fail. No, we need to let children actually fail sometimes.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Because they don't grow. They don't actually, you don't discipline your kids. They're not disciplined if you never enforce a boundary.
Right. If you coddle. I mean, I'll be honest with you. The losing election was one of the best lessons that I ever learned.
Yes.
I will be, the next time I run for office, I will be a better candidate. And if I, should I win, I will be a better representative for having lost an election, because you learn. Hell, Abraham Lincoln lost what, 8 times before he finally won? You learn a lot through loss.
I filed in December. I guess that's a big no-no.
Ah, well, it doesn't matter. I know I've got to run. I know your opponent is endorsed by the KNEA. Frankly, I view that sort of like a Wichita Eagle endorsement. Say, thanks, but no thanks. I won't let, unless you want to take a swing at that, I will just tell you, if anybody's endorsed by the KNEA, that's somebody I'm not going to vote for, as far as I'm concerned.
I'm already a winner. I was endorsed by Kansans for Life. And I I volunteered with them, and I cannot even tell them thank you enough for their endorsement. And I'm very happy with the endorsement I have.
Yeah. Well, like I said, if I were endorsed by the KNEA, that would be a death knell for me. So, Debbie, if folks are interested, if they want to help you, they want more information, they want a yard sign. By the way, we have your yard sign in our yard. The website is potterforparents.org, and that's the number four, correct?
It is. And can I add to that?
Yeah.
All right. So the primary is probably going to be my big part of my election. In order to effectively affect the State Board of Education, we really, really need to put the support behind the candidates that are going to have a little bit harder run in the general election now.
Oh, we'll do it. Trust me.
And,
once we get through the primary.
And so Nancy Moneymaker and Fred Postlewaite, they have been talking to me already. We're trying to problem solve. I've been going to the board meetings over these last 3 years. Already preparing for this because I thought I'd run unopposed.
Well, when we get to the general, we'll definitely have them on. Debbie, I want to thank you again. It's potterforparents.org.
Yes.
I wish you the best of luck. We'll take a quick break, and then I want to hear from you. Our studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. This segment of the John Whitmer Show, sponsored by Americans for Prosperity Kansas. Make your voice heard today. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org. And when you need to stay informed with the free Odyssey app, you can do so at any time. It's very convenient. Get the best breaking local news coverage from KNSS on the go. Just download Odyssey today, search KNSS to get started. And while you're at it, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow us on X at John R. Whitmer. It's time now for another Hartman Truth Minute.
You had your chance. Yes, a chance to elect capable individuals as governor and lieutenant governor, state senators and reps. Some folded their tails between their legs. 10 counties decided for the other 95 Kansans' future, or lack thereof. Let's review. Governor Kelly vetoed 75 tax cuts. The latest opportunity to provide what Kansans deserve cost taxpayers $84,000 in a special session. Result? Failure once again. A watered-down tax plan. If your electeds can't balance their own checkbooks, how do we expect them to calculate a real tax cut? Topeka is no different than D.C. Stop electing the same individuals that are nothing but talking heads on a good day. The people's checkbook, your checkbook, has a $4 billion reserve balance. Let's clean out the rhinos and any others that voted against our future. The electeds couldn't override the governor's veto. They don't seem to support the people of Kansas. It is our duty to make corrections at the ballot box as soon as possible.
Wow, he's absolutely right. Don't forget the Sedgwick County Republican Patriot Night. Get out the vote fundraiser August 9th. Ray, you're on the John Whitmer Show. Thanks for sticking around.
Yes, thank you. I've been wanting to get this out since I bought the Wichita Eagle over the weekend.
That was your first mistake.
I know, but it teased us with... we've got opinions from the people running for the House of Reps or something.
Ah.
So I haven't paid any money for their paper in years, so I thought I was doing all right. But Dion Leffler, the editorial clown.
I know Dion.
Okay, Dion. His headline on the page is, "If Secret Service shot first, crooks would be a martyr because it would be young Trump supporter shot dead by feds outside rally."
Yeah, his argument was that because of the way Ashley Babbitt was treated on the January 6th, the difference is Ashley Babbitt was just participating. Now, granted, she did participate in, you know, she was in the building.
Sure.
But she didn't go there with a gun. She wasn't climbing on the roof with an AR getting ready to shoot.
That's exactly right.
Right. This is Dion Leffler, and I've known Dion for years. Dion is pretty left of center, and that's being generous. So
Yeah. Well, you know, no matter what, the guy had a gun, had a rifle, and it was pointing it at the president.
Yep.
Shoot the guy and ask later.
Yep. You're exactly right, Ray. You're exactly right. I appreciate the call, brother. We'll take a quick break. And then coming up after the top of the hour break, former assistant to President Trump, Peter Navarro, will join us. Fresh from his appearance at the Republican National Convention to explore the future of the President Trump's campaign. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk, sponsored by Wink Hartman and the Hartman Group of Companies. Well, did you miss a part of last week's show? We post clips from all shows. We also post single hours and the entire show as one audio file. Lots to choose from. Just download the Always Live free Odyssey app to get started. And while you're at it, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook and True Social pages, and follow us on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. My next guest, Peter Navarro, author of the new MAGA Deal, the unofficial deplorables guide to Donald Trump's 2024 policy platform, is one of only three senior White House officials who remained with President Trump from the 2016 presidential campaign to the end of his first term in office. Navarro was director of the Office of Trade and Manufacturing Policy, served as policy coordinator for the Defense Production Act during the pandemic, and was a principal architect of Trump's tariff, trade, and tough on China policies. Navarro holds a PhD in economics from Harvard University, a master's in public administration from the Kennedy School of Government, and a BA from Tufts University. Peter, thank you for joining us. It's nice to have you back on the show, my friend.
Hey, it's great to be with you. You are in the middle of this great country, and as good as apple pie, my friend.
I appreciate you, and it's nice to have you on the show, brother. I got to ask you, you were released after serving 4 months in prison on complete, well, we'll just be nice. I'll be nice, not get an FCC fine and say BS charges for contempt of Congress for refusing to comply with the sham January 6th committee. And immediately went to Milwaukee to appear at the RNC. Your message was that if they can come for you, if they can come for Trump, they'll come for us. And you're absolutely right. I mean, the left will come for us, won't they?
And from there I said, if we don't control our government, their government will control us. And what I showed in that speech is how it actually took all three branches of the government, legislative, executive, and judicial, to put me in prison. And when you let the Democrat radicals control all three branches of government like they did, that's what they do.
Right.
I mean, it's remarkable that they accuse Donald Trump of being an authoritarian when they're using every portion of the government to put me in prison, Bannon in prison, and trying to put Trump in prison and keep him from being president. I mean, that's like communist China stuff. So I don't know. I'm out. My mission now is to win, baby, win in November, and not just the White House, but we got to take back the Senate, because that Senate's the one that confirms the judges. And we got to really build a much stronger majority in the House. And if we don't do that, if we lose this election, we're going to lose this country. So I wrote this book, The New MAGA Deal. Folks can get it at newmagadeal.com, newmagadeal.com, or Amazon. And I wrote it, I started on it shortly after the 2022 congressional race, when that red wave never appeared. Remember that disappointment?
Right.
And I was trying to anticipate what might happen in 2024 and not repeat the mistakes of 2022. So in the new MAGA deal, I do two things that will provide your listeners, one with an offensive weapon to win this election, and one is a defensive weapon. The offensive weapon, it has to do with how we fight this battle. I mean, we have to determine the terms of engagement, and I believe that we need to fight them on policy. If you think about what they have, John, they got orange man bad, abortion, abortion, abortion,
right,
and a lot of race and gender politics. That's all they got. But if you look at the polling, you'll see that Donald Trump and his policies trump the woke troops of Kamala on every dimension, as they say in polling, salient to voters. I mean, the biggest issue is inflation and the economy. Trump leads by double digits. Equally big is border security. Trump leads by double digits. If you look at foreign policy, Trump, again, has much more confidence that he'll be able to deal with China, Russia, Iran, North Korea, and everybody else around the globe than the Kamala woke crew. This weaponization of the justice system is a big deal. You know, at the convention, I said, I went to prison so you won't have to. And what I meant by that is, like, look at me. Look at how their government used the tools of government to put me in prison for defending the Constitution. And if you don't think that can happen to you, just look at how they got me and Bannon and trying to get Trump. The point is, and the final, look, the policy stuff, it just drives me nuts when they say MAGA, we're extremists or something like that. It's like, wait a minute, you're the party that wants to have transgender destruction in women's sports. You're the party that's indoctrinating our youth in K through 12. And this whole thing, I mean, any children listening, close your ears now, but this genital mutilization of young boys.
Right.
On the pagan altar of something they call gender dysphonia. I mean, that's like a Fauci phonyism. I mean, it's just crazy stuff. It's like, wear masks, they'll help. What is that about? In the new MAGA deal, what I do in 37 chapters is I lay out all of the policies, 100 actions in 100 days, and people can go out and say, hey, wait a minute. Best reason to vote for Trump is because he's going to fix all our problems.
You're absolutely right, and you know, I'm glad you make it about policy, because they want to make it more about personality and, like you said, orange mad bad or mean tweets.
Yes.
But if you look at policy, if you look at Kamala Harris's policy positions, banning fracking, bans on plastic straws, bans on meat, more Green New Deal, gun confiscation, she really will come for those who oppose her. And I mean, just take a look at just what happened recently. She spurned Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and that's a perfect example of what we could get if we are dumb enough to elect Kamala Harris president.
She's an anti-Semite, plain and simple. She's in bed with Hamas. And she's going to try to claim otherwise, but actions do speak louder than words. But let me tell you the second thing I do in the new MAGA deal, which is really, in my judgment, the more important thing. If you go back to 2022, that famous, I call it the Game of Thrones reference, the red wedding speech Biden made with that red background and the Nazi troops around him and stuff like that, a very dark, over-the-top attack on MAGA as extremists, right? And I go, wait a minute. Like, if you understand what the Make America Great movement stands for, it's mainstream, Main Street, and right down the middle of America. And so what I do in the new MAGA deal, you can get it at newmagadeal.com, I explain what's called the Iron MAGA Triangle, going back to 2016 when Donald Trump was a candidate and I was on the trail with him. And what distinguished him from the 16 other Republicans was this triangle. What is it? It's a strong manufacturing base that you get through things like fair trade, tariffs, and things like that, and Buy American, Hire American.
Right.
And it's that, the second part of the triangle, border security, of course. And the third part is an end to endless. How can you disagree with those principles? That's all MAGA is. That's all it is.
Yeah,
strong manufacturing base, border security. Don't put us in these adventurous wars. I don't know. You know, we need to be able to push back. And so the new MAGA deal book will educate your listeners on how to make the case for Trump, both as an offensive weapon on policy and a defensive weapon deflecting these criticisms of MAGA.
I get frustrated with people who argue against MAGA because I keep pointing out to them it's Make America Great Again. You know, what's so wrong about that concept? We're trying to make your country better. Why would anybody be opposed to that? But it's the left. They hate the country. They hate America. We're talking with former Trump advisor Peter Navarro. Peter, I want to ask you about what's been going on here in the last few weeks. We're seeing it ever since Joe Biden did his little, White House, Oval Office, withdrawal. I'm heading off to Buffalo right off into the sunset speech. The media is really trying to now rewrite history. And it's kind of hilarious to watch. I mean, they forced Joe Biden out, and now all they're doing is rewriting. They're whitewashing Kamala Harris. You know, she wasn't the border czar. Joe Biden wasn't unfit for office. It's kind of amusing to watch because they forced him out, and now the talk is how noble he is. Why can't they just admit the truth? They were going to lose, and so they threw him out. And now it's going to be interesting to watch how this whole thing plays out when they realize that she's going to lose too.
Well, I think the truth is even worse than that. Back in January, in the Washington Times, they wrote an op-ed that basically laid out the Democrat strategy. And what I said then was that Joe Biden would not be the nominee. He would basically be the candidate through all of the primaries so that they would avoid a contested primary where candidates would have to argue about all of their woke policies and it would out them as the radicals they are. You know, America wasn't entitled to see that. They kept that in the closet. And then as soon as the primary was over, at some point before the convention, they'd either force him out or he'd step down voluntarily. And now they forced him out. And it was like, of course, the liberal media turned on him. So This is a strategy. So now we've got the ultimate subversion of democracy. Kamala Harris has not got a single vote to award her the presidential mantle for the Democrat side. She just steps into it like a coronation of a woke princess, and we're supposed to think that that's okay. But remember here, I mean, stations like yours are outposts of truth. But what we're up against is CNN, MSNBC, The Washington Post, The New York Times. And I hope your listeners understand that ABC, CBS, NBC, and PBS are simply slightly less liberal versions of CNN and MSNBC. They're just more subtle
right
about their never-Trumpism. And so You thought it was kind of funny what they're doing. I find it disgusting, frankly, that they're trying to pull this kind of crap. I mean, I can't. If we lose this election, we're going to lose this country. I can't imagine four more years of this crap. They're destroying their economy. The border. When you bring in 8 million illegal immigrants, murderers, rapists, human traffickers, drug cartelists, Chinese spies, Islamic terrorists, and a flood of illiterate workers coming into our labor markets, driving down the wages of a core piece of the Democrat base, black, brown, and blue-collar Americans, that's long and lasting damage. We can't do that, but we've got to make the case on policy. You have Kamala's an easy target. I mean, I was in California when she was putting young black men in jail for nickel bags and going out and smoking fat nights and parties with the liberal elites. Yeah, that's the kind of disgusting thing that she does. But look, it's a race. We're going to have to be smart about it, fight it on policy, defend ourselves on the MAGA extremist critique, and it's the new MAGADeal.com, which provides the way to do that. The book is published by Donald Trump Jr.'s publishing house. And for me, it's not a book. It's a weapon. It's a strategy. And boy, I tell you, folks listening, if you support Trump, you need to do more than vote. You need to go out and make the case.
Yep. Oh, I agree with that. Again, the book is called The New MAGA Deal, The Unofficial Deplorables Guide to Donald Trump's 2024 Policy Platform. Again, it's available on Amazon. And if folks want to connect with you on X, you're at RealPNavarro and PeterNavarro.com, correct?
Yeah, I would stay with the social media for much in prison. I haven't exactly been current on my website and stuff like that. It takes interesting. You go away for 4 months. You don't have access to anything. And, they even took my Social Security away. I didn't even know they could do that. That was kind of interesting.
Wow.
So I'm having to deal with all of that kind of stuff. And so it'll be another couple of weeks before I get back in full fighting weight. But being able to talk with folks like you is very helpful to get the message out. NewMAGADeal.com. Check it out. Amazon, if you're a Prime member and you love getting things like the next day, that's cool too.
Well, Peter, thank you again for joining us, brother, and carry on the fight, my friend.
All right. You take care of yourself out there in Kansas. You are the heartland. Bye-bye.
We'll take a quick break, and then Derek Schmidt will join us to talk about his campaign for the 2nd Congressional District being vacated by the retirement of Congressman Jake LaTurner. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk, sponsored by Wink Hartman and the Hartman Group of Companies. Want to remind you, you can always listen to us by downloading the Odyssey app or telling your smart speaker to play KNSS radio. You'll find podcast links to all our previous episodes there, and make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow us on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Well, with us now is the former Attorney General for the state of Kansas, Derek Schmidt, who, just is a glutton for punishment. He's thrown his hat back in the ring, running for the 2nd Congressional District. Derek, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show again, General.
John, pleasure is all mine. Thanks for having me on, and it is very good to be back.
Well, and I sure as heck wish you were in the in the second floor of the Capitol right now. We'd have decent tax relief if you were, my friend. Trust me.
Well, we'd be a lot better off in a lot of ways. Appreciated everybody's help on that race, and we just had a few shenanigans there at the end that made it difficult.
It happens. It happens. Speaking of races, I saw you got a major endorsement yesterday by someone else who's in a major race. Donald Trump endorsed you yesterday.
Yeah, very true. I am so honored to have the president's endorsement. He called me on Friday evening, told me that he had looked at our race, made a decision that he wanted me there to, my phrase, have his back. But that was essentially his message while he's serving as president next time. And I told him how grateful I was and that he could count on me. So I'm really looking forward to finishing off this race strong and holding this seat for the fall so that we can tell him Kansas, too, is very much in President Trump's corner.
You know, you came down here to Wichita for the KSRA convention. I had the opportunity to host a forum for the three of you in the race. And I got to tell you, the biggest issue that was certainly came up in that forum, and I've heard at the doors, and I'm sure is going to be a major issue in the presidential race, is immigration. I'm sure that's what you're hearing when you're out door knocking and talking to folks up in the 2nd District, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the number one issue. I mean, we hear it everywhere we go, from the Nebraska border down to the Oklahoma border. It's on people's minds. And here's why, I think, John. I mean, people get at sort of a gut level that it doesn't have to be this way.
Right, right.
That this is a manufactured crisis created by bad Biden-Harris liberal policies And we know it doesn't have to be this way because just 3.5 years ago under President Trump, it was not this way. And so, you know, to add insult to injury, in addition to the terrible problem itself, it's a self-inflicted wound by the left. And folks are just furious about it and should be. We've got to get this thing back on track.
If you don't mind, I'd like to give to talk with you for a little bit about Kamala Harris. She was a proud sponsor of the Green New Deal. She is a radical liberal. You prosecuted cases. You're familiar with her legal background. And I think it's interesting. You're the only candidate in this race for Congress who's endorsed by the Fraternal Order of Police. People forget that Harris was also a sponsor of California's bill that said they would no longer prosecute theft under $1,000. You know, I remember having you on this show when you were Attorney General and we were talking about retail theft. It doesn't go far to look at what Harris's record is on that. And gee, if you incentivize theft, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's exactly right, John. And, you know, I don't admit it often, but it's true. I mean, I've known Kamala Harris for a long time, since before she was a national figure. And that's because she was elected Attorney General in the liberal state of California on the same day in November of 2010 that I was elected Attorney General in the conservative state of Kansas. And so we served at the same time for a number of years before she went off to the U.S. Senate and then to the vice presidency. And I got to see her in action and I got to interact with her as we do with Attorney General around the country when you're serving. And you're dead on. I can't overemphasize this. She is a true believer on the left. You know, Joe Biden was governed as a leftist, but I never really knew what his actual beliefs were. He was just a weak president, or is a weak president, who was shoved over to the left by the radical elements of his own party. And so that's where he was. But Kamala is a true believer. She believes that the police are generally not the solution to crime. She believes that the Green New Deal is good public policy and that we have to go that direction. She believes that people ought to be invited illegally over the border and that border enforcement is somehow wrong or maybe racist. I'm not sure exactly how she'd characterize it. I mean, those are things she believes, and that is just so far from our reality in Kansas. I think it may be a little difficult for some of our friends and neighbors here to grasp how far out of our mainstream she is. Should she, God forbid, become president of the United States, this country would lurch further to the left than it already has. And we just cannot have that. We must win this election in November.
We're talking with Derek Schmidt, candidate for the 2nd Congressional District up in Topeka and other parts of western Kansas. You know, Derek, it's as we look at this race, I think the real contest is the primary. And clearly, I mean, you don't want to bank on anything, but I think you're in a solid position. One of the things that I appreciated when I hosted that forum was that all three of you were really solid when it came to recognizing that the dire fiscal situation our country faces, much like, my monologue tonight was on county spending and city spending. One of the major problems we have in D.C. is spending. I don't know what we do about that at the federal level, short of maybe having to shut the place down if we have to. But you guys, and I say you guys, I'm assuming you're going to get up there, but you guys have got to do something about that.
Yeah, 100%, John. That's exactly right. I mean, when I say my prayers every night, I include that, President Trump wins this election, because having control of the White House can make such a fundamental difference in our ability to actually, move the spending needle in the right direction. It is such an uphill climb when you have a president off on the left who wants to spend and spend and spend. And especially when we have thin or sometimes no majorities in the House or the Senate.
Right.
But, we're holding the line by the thinnest now. But look, I do believe that, the course that we are on in terms of this country's finances is entirely unsustainable. And it may well be the greatest threat to the long-term health of our nation. I say may well because I worry about things like the southern border being a more urgent threat But I think we're going to get that fixed, especially with the election of President Trump. But the financial situation of this country is leaves you aghast. I mean, I'm old enough, and I'm not all that old. I'm old enough to remember when the federal budget was actually balanced
right.
for a couple of years in a row, when you had Newt Gingrich and you had Bill Clinton in the White House, and they got that done in the late 90s. And now we're spending multiple trillions of dollars each year more than we are collecting. And that is simply not sustainable. At some point, the creditors will say no more. And unfortunately, many of our creditors include, for example, investors in China.
Yeah, I was going to say that means China.
The thing we want is to allow China to have more control over our national finances. So, you know, look, it's easy to say we got to do something. It's a lot harder to do something. You know, one idea I've thrown out, I think I may have thrown it out when we were together the other day at that gathering you mentioned, but I said, you know, look, I know if I get served and I win this election, I'm going to go up as a freshman. I'm under no illusions that, you know, you don't show up and say, well, here I am. Let me give you the answers. It doesn't work that way. But I do think you can offer up some suggestions, you know, ideas for the grist mill for folks to chew on. And here's an idea. What if we just went back to the federal budget as it existed the year before COVID and said that's our baseline for building next year's budget? Rather than using the baseline of this year's budget to build next year's.
Right.
Because you had this huge explosion of spending during COVID, and now that's baked into the cake. It's the norm. I realize that what I just suggested doesn't, you know, change the big picture, but hey, it moves us in the right direction, and it seems to me eminently reasonable. It's doable. Why don't we try that as a first step and then see where we go from there? So, you know, we're in a hole. We've got to stop digging.
Well, especially when so much of that spending was done to, quote unquote, save businesses or restore the economy. Well, that's done now. Those businesses that survived have survived. They don't need whatever that those programs that were there don't need it anymore. So, I think, and you're right, it's not a perfect solution, but it's some kind of solution. It's something. Let's try something. Because
it's a step.
Right, this current path, as you said, is not sustainable. Derek, thank you again for, you know, joining us this evening. If folks want information, if they want to donate, if they want to get involved, they can find you. It's DerekSchmidt.com, correct?
Yes, sir. I would welcome all the help we can get. We're going to win this election. We're going to go, and we're going to do our absolute best every day to make America great again. We are going to be part of the right team.
And they can find you on X at Derek Schmidt KS. Derek, it's a pleasure. Again, congrats on the endorsement from President Trump, former President Trump, and best of luck, my friend.
Thanks so much, John. Great to be with you and your listeners. Take care.
We'll take a quick break, and then author Daniel Greenfield will join us to explore America's two-tiered legal system, where two soldiers were arrested on charges of stealing pride flags, but Hamas protesters are released after defacing national monuments. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk, sponsored by Americans for Prosperity, Kansas. Every Thursday, AFP Action activates the largest grassroots community operation in the U.S. to join together and phone into key federal races across the country. Gives you an opportunity to join thousands of other citizens making impactful grassroots an army in the country. You can join AFP every Thursday from 3 to 7 p.m. Central Time and phone for freedom. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org to sign up today. And while you're online, go find me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. So here's four headlines for you. Two soldiers arrested on charges of stealing pride flags. Three teens arrested for burning pride flag. Teens arrested after scooters leave skid marks on pride crosswalk. Colorado man charged in New York City for damaging pride flags at Stonewall National Monument. Yet just this week, anti-Israel pro-Hamas mob held a rally in Washington, D.C. to protest Prime Minister Netanyahu's address to Congress. Has anyone been arrested? No, not that I've seen. Joining us now to discuss the blatant double standard in the American justice system is author Daniel Greenfield. Mr. Greenfield is an investigative journalist and columnist with a strong interest in the historical origins of the crisis tearing apart our nation. He's a Shillman Journalist Fellow, at the David Horowitz Freedom Center. He's covered national and international events, broken stories, and shown how the lessons of history can be applied to the president. Daniel, thank you for joining us this evening. Nice to have you on the show.
For having me on.
So these pro-Hamas protesters, I mean, absolutely made a mess in the area. They desecrated monuments to heroes of the American Revolution. They burned American flags, hung up the Hamas flag. They harassed cops. Very few of the cops that actually showed up to do anything. I've yet to see any coverage of the arrests. Yet back in June, Patrick Murphy was charged with a hate crime and criminal mischief after the incident when LGBTQ pride flags displayed at the Stonewall National Monument were vandalized. So it's okay if you're doing it for Hamas, but it's not okay if you damage a rainbow flag. Is that the standard that they're setting here, Daniel?
That's exactly the standard. We've seen this before with BLM. Anybody who drives over one of the BLM signs on the road, those people were arrested. They were in some cases charged with hate crimes. Damaging pride flags, you get charged with a hate crime. You pull down American flags, you burn them while you chant Allahu Akbar. You fly Hamas flags, no problem. These people are being released, including people, by the way, who assaulted police officers. You know, even beyond attacks on flags, previous pro-Hamas protests, these ones, there was a man who inside the United States Capitol punched a female Capitol police officer in the face. This was the kind of thing, you know, after January 6th, you had them have the FBI put out an entire national all-points bulletin. Here, walked away with no jail time. And this has become the pattern.
So here's my question. If I burn an American flag, that's free speech. Why isn't me burning a pride flag free speech?
Yeah, it's the double standard. It's a very basic double standard. By the way, there was actually an attempt to add a constitutional amendment to ban burning American flags. One of the few members of the Senate who voted against it was Barack Obama. Anyway, yes, it absolutely, you know, either they're both free speech, only one is free speech. What the left does is it creates a hate crimes exception to the First Amendment. And the hate crimes exception works in a variety of ways. And part of that is the censorship that we tend to now see, which is considered okay because certain kinds of speech are bad and dangerous, like misinformation or doing something that they consider to be a hate crime. Now, mind you, waving the flag of Hamas, a terrorist organization that is dedicated to killing all the Jews, one would think this is pretty hateful. You had people at the rally who were chanting that they were going to kill the Jews. Not a problem. You had a guy with an ISIS flag and a sign saying that he wants to see all the Jews in Israel killed. Not a problem again, but if you touch a pride flag, that is considered a hate crime. So even when it comes to hate, there is an absolute double standard. And the double standard is whatever the left supports is fine. Whatever the left opposes is a hate crime or misinformation.
Yeah, clearly there's a different set of rules for leftists and Islamists than there is for the others. And those of us who say on the patriot side, we're talking with author Daniel Greenfield. But here's the key. It just seems to me this isn't the law, it's ideology. And the bottom line is, how do you expect people to respect, quote unquote, the rule of law if you're not going to enforce it equally? And you know, the left is constantly, I mean, we've heard this whole diatribe now for going on 2 years. The respect for law, the rule of law, it goes back to Joe Biden talking about the rule of law, except, of course, when the Supreme Court rules against him wanting to give away money to buy votes for those who want, you know, free student loans. But again, if the rule of law is you can't burn a flag, then that has to be applied universally, or vice versa. If I can burn a flag, then I should be able to burn any flag. I just don't understand how you expect us to take you seriously if you're not going to apply the rule equally.
It's force, pretty much. There's no legal basis for classifying things in dramatically different fashion. In some cases, they managed to pass a law that basically says, well, in this case, the First Amendment was waived. They did this with abortion clinic protests. You have people who nonviolently protest in front of abortion clinics. or facing 5 to 10 years in prison because of something called the Faith Access Act, which basically says that all other forms of protest are illegal, but not protesting in front of an abortion clinic. But even there, the act specifically covers reproductive centers and pro-life centers, pro-life pregnancy centers, which were being targeted after the Roe v. Wade was struck down.
Right.
The FBI has basically ignored over 100 of those arsons. So even there, there's a double standard. And the bottom line is the left does maintain this double standard. And it's up to us. It's up to people who care about the law to change that. But the left is not going to stop enforcing a double standard. There's an old line, for my friends, everything, for my enemies, the law. This is how the left operates.
And, you know, you refer to these as, or they call them, hate crimes, but who defines hate? It's a crime, it's a crime. And if you didn't have hate in your heart, you wouldn't be committing crimes. But who defines what is a crime? Or hate crime, rather. Who defines what's hate? You know what I mean?
No, that is a very good question. And the definition of hate at this point has been watered down to something called bias intimidation, which basically means somebody feels threatened by your behavior,
right,
which is subjective, and it shifts the onus from what the experience of the person being threatened is rather than the motive of the supposed perpetrator, which is how we got completely insane prosecutions during the BLM era, where, you know, people were being prosecuted in some cases for simply calling the police, because calling the police now becomes a threatening act. And that's how backward that is.
Yes. You're the author of the new book, Domestic Enemies, The Founding Fathers Fight Against the Left. If folks are interested, they can find that at danielgreenfield.org, correct?
That's absolutely correct. You can also find it on Amazon and bookstores everywhere.
Daniel, I appreciate you. Thank you for joining us this evening. Pleasure to have you on the show, my friend.
Thank you. It was always my pleasure.
We'll take a quick break. Our studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk, sponsored by Americans for Prosperity, Kansas. Make your voice heard today. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org. And from breaking news to severe weather updates, KNSS is always here for you. Let's keep it that way. Keep AM radio in vehicles now by texting AM to 52886 and tell Congress to keep AM radio in cars. And while you're at it, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook and True Social pages, and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. It's time now for a Hartman Truth Minute.
You had your chance. Yes, a chance to elect capable individuals as governor and lieutenant governor, state senators, and reps. Some folded their tails between their legs. 10 counties decided for the other 95 Kansans' future, or lack thereof. Let's review. Governor Kelly vetoed 75 tax cuts. The latest opportunity to provide what Kansans deserve cost taxpayers $84,000 in a special session. Result? Failure once again. A watered-down tax plan. If your electeds can't balance their own checkbooks, how do we expect them to calculate a real tax cut? Topeka is no different than D.C. Stop electing the same individuals that are nothing but talking heads on a good day. The people's checkbook, your checkbook, has a $4 billion reserve balance. Let's clean out the rhinos and any others that voted against our future. The electeds couldn't override the governor's veto. They don't seem to support the people of Kansas. It is our duty to make corrections at the ballot box as soon as possible.
Don't forget the Sedgwick County Republican Party evening with the governors. Brownback and Collier coming up August 9th. The weekly Pachyderm Club luncheon, Fridays at noon at the 9th Floor Club. That's the former Pachyderm Club. And Republican Women United, their meetings are held the second Saturday of the month, so they'll be coming up here in August. If you want information on any of these events, you can visit the John Whitmer Show Facebook page. And don't forget our new sponsor, Eck Insurance, will be. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk, sponsored by Wink Hartman and the Hartman Group of Companies. Want to remind you, you can always listen to us by downloading the Odyssey app or telling your smart speaker to play KNSS radio. You'll find podcast links to all our previous episodes there, and make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow us on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Well, with us now is the former Attorney General for the state of Kansas, Derek Schmidt, who, you know, I just is a glutton for punishment. He's thrown his hat back in the ring, running for the second congressional district. Derek, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show again, General.
John, pleasure is all mine. Thanks for having me on, and it is very good to be back.
Well, and I sure as heck wish you were in the second floor of the Capitol right now. We'd have decent tax relief if you were, my friend. Trust me.
Well, we'd be a lot better off in a lot of ways. Appreciated everybody's help on that race, and we just had a few shenanigans there at the end that made it difficult.
It happens. It happens. Speaking of races, I saw you got a major endorsement yesterday by someone else who's in a major race. Donald Trump endorsed you yesterday.
Yeah, very true. I am so honored to have the president's endorsement. He called me on Friday evening, told me that he had looked at our race, made a decision that he wanted me there to, my phrase, have his back. But that was essentially his message while he's serving as president next time. And I told him how grateful I was and that he could count on me. So I'm really looking forward to finishing off this race strong and holding this seat for the fall so that we can tell him Kansas, too, is very much in President Trump's corner.
You know, you came down here to Wichita for the KSRA convention. I had the opportunity to host a forum for the three of you in the race. And I got to tell you, the biggest issue that was certainly came up in that forum, and I've heard at the doors, and I'm sure is going to be a major issue in the presidential race, is immigration. I'm sure that's what you're hearing when you're out door knocking and talking to folks up in the second district, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the number one issue. I mean, we hear it everywhere we go, from the Nebraska border down to the Oklahoma border. It's on people's minds. And here's why, I think, John. I mean, people get at sort of a gut level that it doesn't have to be this way.
Right, right.
That this is a manufactured crisis created by bad Biden-Harris liberal policies. And we know it doesn't have to be this way because just 3.5 years ago under President Trump, it was not this way. And so, you know, to add insult to injury, in addition to the terrible problem itself, it's a self-inflicted wound by the left. And folks are just furious about it and should be. We've got to get this thing back on track.
If you don't mind, I'd like to talk with you for a little bit about Kamala Harris. She was a proud sponsor of the Green New Deal. She is a radical liberal. Prosecuted cases. You're familiar with her legal background. And I think it's interesting. You're the only candidate in this race for Congress who's endorsed by the Fraternal Order of Police. People forget that Harris was also a sponsor of California's bill that said they would no longer prosecute theft under $1,000. You know, I remember having you on this show when you were Attorney General and we were talking about retail theft. It doesn't go far to look at what Harris's record is on that. And gee, if you incentivize theft, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's exactly right, John. And, you know, I don't admit it often, but it's true. I mean, I've known Kamala Harris for a long time, since before she was a national figure. And that's because she was elected Attorney General in the liberal state of California on the same day in November of 2010 that I was elected Attorney General in the conservative state of Kansas. And so we served at the same time for a number of years before she went off to the U.S. Senate and then to the vice presidency. And I got to see her in action, and I got to interact with her as we do with attorneys general around the country when you're serving. And you're dead on. I can't overemphasize this. She is a true believer on the left. You know, Joe Biden was governed as a leftist, but I never really knew what his actual beliefs were. He was just a weak president, or is a weak president, who was shoved over to the left by the radical elements of his own party. And so that's where he was. But Kamala's a true believer. She believes that the police are generally not the solution to crime. She believes that the Green New Deal is good public policy and that we have to go that direction. She believes that people ought to be invited illegally over the border and that border enforcement is somehow wrong or maybe racist. I'm not sure exactly how she'd characterize it. I mean, those are things she believes, and that is just so far from our reality in Kansas. I think it may be a little difficult for some of our friends and neighbors here to grasp how far out of our mainstream she is. Should she, God forbid, become president of the United States, this country would lurch further to the left than it already has. And we just cannot have that. We must win this election in November.
We're talking with Derek Schmidt, candidate for the 2nd Congressional District up in Topeka and other parts of western Kansas. You know, Derek, it's as we look at this race, I think the real contest is the primary. And clearly, I mean, you don't want to bank on anything, but I think you're in a solid position. One of the things that I appreciated when I hosted that forum was that all three of you were really solid when it came to recognizing that the dire fiscal situation our country faces, much like, my monologue tonight was on county spending and city spending. One of the major problems we have in D.C. is spending. And I just, yeah. I don't know what we do about that at the federal level, short of maybe having to shut the place down if we have to. But you guys, and I say you guys, I'm assuming you're going to get up there, but you guys have got to do something about that.
Yeah, 100%, John. That's exactly right. I mean, when I say my prayers every night, I include that President Trump wins this election, because having control of the White House can make such a fundamental difference in our ability to actually, move the spending needle in the right direction. It is such an uphill climb when you have a president off on the left who wants to spend and spend and spend. And especially when we have thin or sometimes no majorities in the House or the Senate.
Right.
But, we're holding the line by the thinnest now. But look, I do believe that, the course that we are on in terms of this country's finances is entirely unsustainable. And it may well be the greatest threat to the long-term health of our nation. I say may well because I worry about things like the southern border being a more urgent threat. But I think we're going to get that fixed, especially with the election of President Trump. But the financial situation of this country leaves you aghast. I mean, I'm old enough, and I'm not all that old. I'm old enough to remember when the federal budget was actually balanced
right
for a couple of years in a row, when you had Newt Gingrich and you had Bill Clinton in the White House, and they got that done in the late 90s. And now we're spending multiple trillions of dollars each year more than we are collecting. And that is simply not sustainable. At some point, the creditors will say no more. And unfortunately, many of our creditors include, for example, investors in China.
Yeah, I was going to say, that means China.
The last thing we want is to allow China to have more control over our national finances. So, look, it's easy to say we got to do something. It's a lot harder to do something. One idea I've thrown out, I think I may have thrown it out when we were together the other day at that gathering you mentioned, but I said, look, I know if I get served and I win this election, I'm going to go up as a freshman. I'm under no illusions that, you don't show up and say, well, here I am. Let me give you the answers. It doesn't work that way. But I do think you can offer up some suggestions, ideas for the grist mill for folks to chew on. And here's an idea. What if we just went back to the federal budget as it existed the year before COVID and said that's our baseline for building next year's budget, rather than using the baseline of this year's budget to build next year's?
Right.
Because you had this huge explosion of spending during COVID, and now that's baked into the cake. It's the norm. I realize that what I just suggested doesn't, change the big picture, but hey, it moves us in the right direction, and it seems to me eminently reasonable. It's doable. Why don't we try that as a first step and then see where we go from there? So, we're in a hole. We've got to stop digging.
Well, especially when so much of that spending was done to, quote unquote, save businesses or restore the economy. Well, that's done now. Those businesses that survived have survived. They don't need whatever those programs that were there don't need it anymore. So I think, and you're right, it's not a perfect solution, but it's some kind of solution. It's something. Let's try something. Because this current path, as you said, is not sustainable. Derek, thank you again for, you know, joining us this evening. If folks want information, if they want to donate, if they want to get involved, they can find you. It's DerekSchmidt.com, correct?
Yes, sir. I would welcome all the help we can get. We're going to win this election. We're going to go, and we're going to do our absolute best every day to make America great again. We are going to be part of the right team.
And they can find you on X at Derek Schmidt KS. Derek, it's a pleasure. Again, congrats on the endorsement from President Trump, former President Trump, and best of luck, my friend.
Thanks so much, John. Great to be with you and your listeners. Take care.
We'll take a quick break, and then author Daniel Greenfield will join us to explore America's two-tiered legal system, where two soldiers were arrested on charges of stealing pride flags, but Hamas protesters are released after defacing national monuments. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk, sponsored by Americans for Prosperity Kansas. Every Thursday, AFP Action activates the largest grassroots community operation in the U.S. to join together and phone into key federal races across the country. Gives you an opportunity to join thousands of other citizens making impactful grassroots an army in the country. You can join AFP every Thursday from 3 to 7 p.m. Central Time and phone for freedom. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org to sign up today. And while you're online, go find me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. So here's four headlines for you. Two soldiers arrested on charges of stealing pride flags. Three teens arrested for burning pride flag. Teens arrested after scooters leave skid marks on pride crosswalk. Colorado man charged in New York City for damaging pride flags at Stonewall National Monument. Yet just this week, anti-Israel pro-Hamas mob held a rally in Washington, D.C. to protest Prime Minister Netanyahu's address to Congress. Has anyone been arrested? No, not that I've seen. Joining us now to discuss the blatant double standard in the American justice system is author Daniel Greenfield. Mr. Greenfield is an investigative journalist and columnist with a strong interest in the historical origins of the crisis tearing apart our nation. He's a Shillman Journalist Fellow, at the David Horowitz Freedom Center. He's covered national and international events, broken stories, and shown how the lessons of history can be applied to the president. Daniel, thank you for joining us this evening. Nice to have you on the show.
For having me on.
So these pro-Hamas protesters, I mean, absolutely made a mess in the area. They desecrated monuments to heroes of the American Revolution. They burned American flags, hung up the Hamas flag. They harassed cops. Very few of the cops that actually showed up to do anything. I've yet to see any coverage of the arrests. Yet back in June, Patrick Murphy was charged with a hate crime and criminal mischief after the incident when LGBTQ pride flags displayed at the Stonewall National Monument were vandalized. So it's okay if you're doing it for Hamas, but it's not okay if you damage a rainbow flag. Is that the standard that they're setting here, Daniel?
That's exactly the standard. We've seen this before with BLM. Anybody who drives over one of the BLM signs on the road, those people were arrested. They were in some cases charged with hate crimes. Damaging pride flags, you get charged with a hate crime. You pull down American flags, you burn them while you chant Allahu Akbar. You fly Hamas flags, no problem. These people are being released, including people, by the way, who assaulted police officers. You know, even beyond attacks on flags, previous pro-Hamas protests, these ones, there was a man who inside the United States Capitol punched a female Capitol police officer in the face. This was the kind of thing, you know, after January 6th, you had them have the FBI put out an entire national all-points bulletin. Here, walked away with no jail time. And this has become the pattern.
So here's my question. If I burn an American flag, that's free speech. why isn't me burning a pride flag free speech?
Yeah, it's the double standard. It's a very basic double standard. By the way, there was actually an attempt to add a constitutional amendment to ban burning American flags. One of the few members of the Senate who voted against it was Barack Obama. Anyway, yes, it absolutely, you know, either they're both free speech, only one is free speech. What the left does is it creates a hate crimes exception to the First Amendment. And the hate crimes exception works in a variety of ways. And part of that is the censorship that we tend to now see, which is considered okay because certain kinds of speech are bad and dangerous, like misinformation or doing something that they consider to be a hate crime. Now, mind you, waving the flag of Hamas, a terrorist organization that is dedicated to killing all the Jews, one would think this is pretty hateful. You had people at the rally who were chanting that they were going to kill the Jews. Not a problem. You had a guy with an ISIS flag and a sign saying that he wants to see all the Jews in Israel killed. Not a problem again. But if you touch a pride flag, that is considered a hate crime. So even when it comes to hate, there is an absolute double standard. And the double standard is whatever the left supports is fine. Whatever the left opposes is a hate crime or misinformation.
Yeah, clearly there's a different set of rules for leftists and Islamists than there is for the others. And those of us who say on the patriot side, we're talking with author Daniel Greenfield. But here's the key. It just seems to me this isn't the law, it's ideology. And the bottom line is, how do you expect people to respect, quote unquote, the rule of law if you're not going to enforce it equally? And the left is constantly, I mean, we've heard this whole diatribe now for going on 2 years. The respect for law, the rule of law, it goes back to Joe Biden talking about the rule of law, except, of course, when the Supreme Court rules against him wanting to give away money to buy votes for those who want, you know, free student loans. But again, if the rule of law is you can't burn a flag, then that has to be applied universally, or vice versa. If I can burn a flag, then I should be able to burn any flag. I just don't understand how you expect us to take you seriously if you're not going to apply the rule equally.
It's force, pretty much. There's no legal basis for classifying things in dramatically different fashion. In some cases, they managed to pass a law that basically says, well, in this case, the First Amendment was waived. They did this with abortion clinic protests. You have people who nonviolently protest in front of abortion clinics who are facing 5 to 10 years in prison because of something called the Faith Access Act, which basically says that all other forms of protest are illegal, but not protesting in front of an abortion clinic. But even there, the act specifically covers reproductive centers and pro-life centers, pregnancy centers, which were being targeted after the Roe v. Wade was struck down.
Right.
The FBI has basically ignored over 100 of those arsons. So even there's a double standard. And the bottom line is the left does maintain this double standard, and it's up to us. It's up to people who care about the law to change that. But the left is not going to stop enforcing a double standard. There's an old line, for my friends, everything, for my enemies, the law. This is how the left operates.
And, you know, you refer to these as, or they call them hate crimes, but who defines hate? It's a crime, it's a crime. And if you didn't have hate in your heart, you wouldn't be committing crimes. But who defines what is a crime? Or hate crime, rather. Who defines what's hate? You know what I mean?
No, that is a very good question. And the definition of hate at this point has been watered down to something called bias intimidation, which basically means somebody feels threatened by your behavior,
right,
which is subjective, and it shifts the onus from what the experience of the person being threatened is rather than the motive of the supposed perpetrator, which is how we got completely insane prosecutions during the BLM era, where, you know, people were being prosecuted in some cases for simply calling the police, because calling the police now becomes a threatening act. And that's how backward that is.
Yes. You're the author of the new book, Domestic Enemies, The Founding Fathers Fight Against the Left. If folks are interested, they can find that at danielgreenfield.org, correct?
That's absolutely correct. You can also find it on Amazon and bookstores everywhere.
Daniel, I appreciate you. Thank you for joining us this evening. Pleasure to have you on the show, my friend.
Thank you. It was always my pleasure.
We'll take a quick break. Our studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. You're listening to The John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk, sponsored by Americans for Prosperity Kansas. Make your voice heard today. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org. And from breaking news to severe weather updates, KNSS is always here for you. Let's keep it that way. Keep AM radio in vehicles now by texting AM to 52886 and tell Congress to keep AM radio in cars. And while you're at it, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook and True Social pages, and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. It's time now for a Hartman Truth Minute.
You had your chance. Yes, a chance to elect capable individuals as governor and lieutenant governor, state senators, and reps. Some folded their tails between their legs. 10 counties decided for the other 95 Kansans' future, or lack thereof. Let's review. Governor Kelly vetoed 75 tax cuts. The latest opportunity to provide what Kansans deserve cost taxpayers $84,000 in a special session. Result? Failure once again. A watered-down tax plan. If your electeds can't balance their own checkbooks, how do we expect them to calculate a real tax cut? Topeka is no different than D.C. Stop electing the same individuals that are nothing but talking heads on a good day. The people's checkbook, your checkbook, has a $4 billion reserve balance. Let's clean out the rhinos and any others that voted against our future. The electeds couldn't override the governor's veto. They don't seem to support the people of Kansas. It is our duty to make corrections at the ballot box as soon as possible.
Don't forget the Sedgwick County Republican Party evening with the governors. Brownback and Collier coming up August 9th. The weekly Pachyderm Club luncheon, Fridays at noon at the 9th Floor Club. That's the former Pachyderm Club. And Republican Women United, their meetings are held the second Saturday of the month, so that'll be coming up here in August. You want information on any of these events, you can visit the John Whitmer Show Facebook page. And don't forget our new sponsor, Eck Insurance, will be taking us to Topeka coming up here in January. We'll start broadcasting one Sunday a month out of Topeka. Mike, you're on the John Whitmer Show. Thanks for sticking around.
Hey, I got a question for you. So,
yeah,
we saw a giant swing to the left when Trump got allegedly voted out of office. So, when he gets voted back in, are we ready for what the left is capable of when he gets back in office? Are we ready for that? Because we know what they're capable of.
Well, I mean, I'm sure we are. Obviously, we know what the press will do. They will come after him. I think the big difference is what he does in response. I think, you know, the first time around, he tried to work within the system. I think this time around, he's going to be better prepared to deal with the establishment, the bureaucracy. I think he will. The other thing he will do differently, he will surround himself with some better people. And that was one of his biggest mistakes the last time around, was he had a bunch of folks that were kind of D.C. insiders instead of surrounding himself with better folks. I'm sorry, Mike, I'm up on my top of the hour. Got a great show planned next week. Big surprises. Have a great week. Carry on, fellow deplorables.